Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Environment policy, natural resource policy. We're going to have Representative Hornstein before us, House File 2412. The chair moves House File 2412. And we do have an amendment, and this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the game and fish bill. Representative Hornstein, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate your hearing, House File 2412. I would like to have the amendment moved first, the DE2.
Okay, chair will move the DE2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. To the bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the amendment simply, it's very similar to the original bill, but it indicates that our City of Minneapolis Park Board will be covering the expenses for our proposal here to get rid of these cattails. So that's what the amendment does. Thank you for incorporating that. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to first give you a little background on the park in question here. This is, and I think we have some
pictures. Isn't this, Representative Hornstein, the same thing we had before us last year? The same lake?
Yes.
I thought it was.
Okay. Thank you.
Any members have any questions on the bill? I don't see any questions, Representative Hornstein. Anyone like to testify for or against the bill? You want to testify for the bill or you want to testify against the bill?
For the bill.
All right. Go right ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Lee Fralick. I'm the director of the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology, and I live in the neighborhood. So this particular cattail is a hybrid of an exotic cattail and our native species. It forms a monoculture. It's more aggressive than either parent plant. It's taken over most of our marshes in Minnesota, including Loring Lake, so that you can't even see the lake when you walk around it in the summer on the path because they are taller than, the hybrid is taller than the parent cattails. It's a major safety issue in our park because we have hundreds of thousands of people in the park for various events throughout the summer. And we need to get rid of the cattails because they are also forming a floating mat, and they are capable of going right over out over the deep water, and it will cease to be a lake if we don't remove these cattails.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the testifier? There being none, anybody in the room to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the bill. We do support in concept what they're trying to do, and we are working with the Park Board on doing this. However, there are certain pieces in statute and rule that currently prohibit us from granting variances from certain amounts of limits of removal without a Lake Vegetation Management Plan, 103G.615, and Minnesota Rules 6280. In several places prevent us from issuing variances to certain limitations, about 15%, 15 feet, things like that. So we're going to be working with the author and the Park Board to make sure that we can make sure that this is addressed either through a Lake Vegetation Management Plan or some other statutory language.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Meyer, but this is shall issue a general aquatic plan. It doesn't talk about any of those other things, and that's the bill before us. We appreciate your testimony, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Council could. Is this the same thing that Representative Benson had last year, just to get on the record?
That's correct.
Yes.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I've been getting a lot of letters, and I just walked in here, so if I'm offline, I'm sure the Chair will correct me.
We're laying this over for possible inclusion in the bill later.
I just want to add that I've been getting a number of communications from the folks at Shavers Lake. I thought we had that pretty much settled. It seems that new obstacles have been put up again, so they have not been able to carry through as the legislation, which I thought clearly authorized them to be able to move forward on controlling their problems there. So I'm just bringing that up because I'm not sure whether legislation makes much difference sometimes when it has to do with granting people permits.
Well,
Mr. by the DNR.
Representative Benson, I don't remember exactly the wording in last year's bill, but this is shall issue a general aquatic plan. So
yeah, and that's what we had too. Shall issue.
We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion. Is there anyone else like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Hornstein, anything else that you'd like to add to the bill?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your hearing this. I have a lot of testimony, but I will dispense with that. I just wanted to just say that this has gotten really bad. It started in 2004. It's getting worse every single year. So we're really hoping this will be the year we get some action. I really appreciate it, Mr. Chair.
Chair moves again to lay over the bill for possible inclusion. All in favor? Well, I guess we don't vote on that. Thank you very much, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Ladies Chairman.
Next item is Representative Hansen. That is House File 2804. That also be laid over for possible inclusion for the Game and Fish Bill. Representative Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And House File 2804 is a simple bill. Some of you may have seen articles in some of the media in the last few weeks about native bobwhite quail. This particular bill asks the Commissioner of Natural Resources, in consultation with interested parties, to develop a detailed plan to recover the historical native population of quail in Minnesota and to report back to us by January 15th next year. That's the bill. And I have looked for my testifier.
Mr. Tucker, you in the room?
I don't know if there are is anyone else that want to testify. I know the DNR has some concerns about this. A couple things looking at quail. Bobwhite quail were native to Minnesota in the southeastern portion of the state. As our climate continues to change, I personally have seen quail in southern Minnesota. I think there may be questions of whether those are native, have moved across the state line, or have been released. But here is a native bird that I think we should take a look at recovering this. We've done this with other species as well.
Okay. Department. Dwyer. To the committee, I grew up in the quail range all the way through college. I consider it to be the most sporting bird. And I go down every year, or try to go every year to Georgia and go on a plantation hunt. I can tell you that is nothing like a wild quail hunt. It is so exciting, and to use pointers or setters or flushing labs, that is really a wonderful sport. I would love to see quail anywhere, as well as Minnesota. I think that Mr. Meyer will have some information. Representative Euclid.
Chair Bill, thank you. I would echo that. I mean, I've hunted quail down in Texas a few times, and it's just a sport that Minnesota's missing out on. And we do have some habitat, and we used to have years ago almost a viable quail population. So this is one of the things that if we manage it right, I don't know if it'll be as successful as turkey hunting has become, but this is something that we should look into because it's a wonderful sport in other parts of the country.
But I want to say that I did grow up in the quail range, I mean, in the very heart of it, but where I grew up is no longer the quail range. The winters, global warming has just had such severe winters that we haven't been able to keep them alive. That was a kind of a pun. Anyway, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, my curiosity has me. What was the quail range in Minnesota? When you grew up?
No, I was in Indiana.
Oh, you're in Indiana. Okay.
I'm a little worried about the quail range in Minnesota, but that still would be a wonderful thing. When I was in high school, I always had one complimentary day off from school during the school week, during the quail season from school, where my dad and I just drove around the city of Indianapolis on the outskirts, on the suburb edges, like out in Dakota County or somewhere would be for here, and we just would routinely shoot a limit of quail with no effort, essentially, which was 10 per person, and that was around the city. And then if you went out in the country, it was just phenomenal and incredible. So with that, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, Director Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, we do understand the desire of folks to have a plan that would help us prepare for another population of quail. However, we do recognize some logistical concerns about reestablishing the quail population. One is the winter time. So we can prepare a plan, but I don't know how successful the state will be in reestablishing the population. So we do understand there are people who are interested in trying to reestablish the quail within the state of Minnesota. We can look at that. We'll address the fiscal impacts within the Finance Committee. But just at the end of the day, we don't know how the implementation of that plan, how successful that will be. We do have a concern about that.
Do you have any estimates? Not the fiscal committee. Representative Wagenius is here. What does it cost to do a plan like this? A round number?
Mr. Chairman, members, we're thinking, depending on the intentions, I was speaking with the author about his intentions. He'd like to have several public meetings and the plan. It would be, ballparking about $10,000 or so, give or take. So,
okay. Any questions from the members on House File 2804? Anyone in the audience like to testify? Mr. Ness? Mr. Tucker, are you in here now? Well, signed up to testify. I don't see him. Representative Hansen. Mr. Ness, thank you for introduce yourself for the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lance Ness, president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. We support the bill. Real quickly, Mr. Chairman, there was one time we didn't think we could have wild turkeys in this state, and they thought we could only have them in the southeast area only, and now we have turkeys in two-thirds of the state. Given conservation groups, they're pretty good at what they do, and give us a chance, and maybe we can bring back the quail.
Yep, I remember down in where I grew up, it was about 80% mortality on the birds per year, but they're very prolific under the right circumstances. So, anyway, any questions on the bill by the members? There being none, Representative Hansen moves to lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Representative Dill moves that House File 2733 be re-referred to Committee on Environmental Natural Resources and Agriculture Finance, and I understand that there's also going to be a DE author's amendment.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Let me get the right poll.
Representative Dill, did you want us to go ahead and move the DE1?
Yep. I'll move, Mr. Chair, I'll move the DE1 amendment.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor for the DE1 to get the bill into the author's requested shape, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, then, Mr. Chairman, A6 amendment that I'd like to move.
Okay, there's a motion for the A6. Is there any discussion on the A6? Hearing none, all in favor of the A6 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Go ahead, Representative Dill.
Then I think that what I'd like to do is if there's any questions on the bill as amended at this point, I'd like to have questions asked, and then we have several other amendments as well that we could take after we get the initial rounds. Would be my suggestion, get the initial round of questions over with and then take the amendments.
Okay, we can definitely do that. Did you want to have any presentation from Mr. Meyer from the Department of Natural Resources first, or do you want to go straight to questions?
Well, I think that this is something that we've been working on for quite a while, and if members have specific questions, this has to go to Representative Wagenius's Finance Committee, and this is the first time some of the members have seen the delete all amendment, things that we've worked on with different members around the table. So maybe we could just go, Mr. Meyer says he would like to speak to us. So
okay, Mr. Meyer, I'd like to go ahead, please.
Mr. Chair, members, I just think it'll help people understand what it is in the bill and what we're moving forward really quickly. The amendment that we just offered, the A6, is an amendment to our delegation order language that we work with the counties doing AIS work. So when the county is going to assume the inspection and decontamination authorities from the state, we had some problems with the county's insurance trust with assuming all of the authorities. So we've kind of worked with them and our legal staff to soften it up a little bit. We feel that it still meets our needs and hopefully will meet the needs of the counties as well. This bill is the DNR policy technical bill. It contains a number of different pieces. A lot of the language in the bill relates to changing the process that we use from designated aquatic infested lakes to listing them. So rather than go through an order published in the state register, which takes us several weeks, now we will do, you'll see in the bill, a process that will just list them through a public service announcement. So with that, Mr. Chairman, Section 1 relates to that, is changing designated to listed. Section 2 changes designated to listed. Section 3 also changes designated to listed. Section 4 is contained in several other bills this session, but what it does, it removes the semi-annual permitting efficiency report that Representative Fabian was successful in passing into law, but I think he does support this provision. We still do the annual provision with the 150-day permit timing. Sometimes there's a lot of permits that fall in the middle of that, so we can't report on them. This is just clarifying that the report is on an annual basis. Section 5 allows us the ability to move forward our operating budgets for our regional offices from fiscal year. So you can see the receipts on 4.15. Receipts shall be credited to a special account and appropriated the commissioner to pay the cost for which the billings were made. Section 6 is language that was amended in this committee on the snowmobile odometer bill that's in this bill, clarifying the definition of a snowmobile. Section 7, there's an amendment on. I will leave that. Section 8, there's also an amendment on clarifying that language. Basically, the language that we drafted into the bill created another problem in a different section, so we're trying to straighten out what the intent was. Our intent on this section is to allow for your car, your pickup truck that's not registered as an off-highway vehicle where you don't have the ORV sticker on it, to be used on forest roads that are designated as part of a trail system as well during the hunting season. So you don't have to pay $12 to buy the sticker to do that. Section 9 deals with the designated to listed. 10, 11, 12, 13 also deal with the designated to listed. Now, you'll see here on Section 14, 6.18, this is the process that we will use, and actually it's contained on line 7.3 on, where we're striking designation of infested waters, and now let's say the commissioner shall maintain a list of infested waters and provide access to a copy of the listed waters. So that's a new process we'll have. It allows us to be faster and more flexible. Section, the next section there, Subdivision 3, also contains to that. The language on that whole page does. Section 15 on the bottom of 8 also contains that change. Moving on, Section 9 deals, all of those changes deal with designated to listing. Section 17 on page 10 does the same thing. Section 18 as well. 19, moving on, I'm on page 12 now. We're picking up, that's the last of the changes going from designated to listed. Section 21 on page 12, basically it clarifies our master planning process within the Outdoor Recreation Act. Any unit that contains development of buildings, trails, infrastructure needs to have a master plan. So we're just streamlining how that has to be done, clarifying language on it, and the public review process. You can see 12.30, rather than have a formal public hearing, we're changing that to a public meeting in the vicinity of the unit. And then we're changing how the master plan will be published. You can see Subdivision 3 on page 13, the content. Since the Commissioner of Natural Resources is the one preparing these now, in the beginning of the Outdoor Rec Act, there were other units that were out there. Now the remaining pieces of the Outdoor Rec Act are all administered by the Department of Natural Resources, so we feel it's redundant to have to be submitted to the Commissioner of Natural Resources pursuant to review. So we're clarifying that. And we're talking about in 13.15 that'll provide for the administration, just clarifying the language there. The public, the notification process, the changes in 13.12 to 13.24, we're streamlining that process. You can see the changes there in Subdivision 4 are really just technical nature after review of the master plan by the commissioner and the governor if requested. Obviously, the governor can review any of our documents at any time, and we keep the governor's office up to speed on all of these development issues. The big piece of this change is in Subdivision 6, 13.33, which creates a master plan amendment process. Previously to this, there is no process to create an amendment to a master plan. So this is something that we've been looking for and are excited to have put in place. Section 22 is a technical change that the Historical Society does support that expands their need to create a registry for their units as well. Section 23 deals with the listed piece. Section 24 is a technical change that deals with floodplain management ordinances. And since the National Flood Insurance Program has been created, these statutes are somewhat antiquated. So we're just changing that the commissioner shall or may notify affected local government units. And then striking within 6 months that they need to prepare and update their floodplain management ordinances. Basically, the floodplain management in the state has progressed or evolved to such a state that we know the floodplains are pretty much all identified, designated. Most, if not all, the communities have insurance. They know the requirements that need to take place out there, and we have met with the counties and the cities, and I believe that they support this language. They haven't said anything different to me. So Section 25, just as clarifying that, rather than mandate them to require this, we're just saying that they have to be in accordance with local government units' adopted floodplain management ordinance. Section 26, rather than give them 120 days, we're just saying after they receive a notice from the commissioner of FEMA that flood hazards have been identified, flood area hazards have been identified, they're encouraged to apply for participation, rather than mandates them to apply for flood insurance. Section 27, 16.18 to 16.12, the removal of debris. This is already covered in rule. It was something that was done in 2010, which at that time we were testifying that this was duplicative language. So we're trying to just remove that and clarify that that is already available within rule. Section 28 deals with AIS. We've talked about lakewide or bayside treatments. This allows that. We're moving that restriction that that we can't treat at a lakewide or baywide treatment level, which we do on Lake Minnetonka. Section 29 was a technical change dealing with, actually, Section 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35 all deal with the odometer tampering bill. That was, I believe, heard in this committee. Section 36 is a section of law that we've been working on dealing with the Minnesota River Valley from Upper and Lower Sioux State Park to Fort Ridgely State Park. The vision for the folks in that area is to create a connected unit that will allow for outdoor recreation but also provide for the historical character of that area. What people really want to do down there is have a series of trails that are interconnected through the different outdoor recreation units in the cities that a person can ride a horse or mountain bike or backpack from to bread and breakfast or city to city, somewhat like the Superior Hiking Trail goes along the North Shore. So before we create a new unit, we want to do a master plan to identify where that trail is, how it will be connected, what should we call it, who's going to pay for it, how we're going to operate it. All of those things will be contained in this master plan.
All right. Questions for the testifier, Representative Bouguinas.
On the master plan in the Minnesota River Valley, since it's only a segment, and it's my understanding that we want something in the Minnesota River Valley that goes from Fort Snelling all the way up the river. So how do we know that this will fit in with that unless we have, if we're looking, why aren't we looking at the whole master plan, I guess is my question.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bouguinas, that's a great question. I believe that segment you're looking at may be covered under a separate master plan. Let me find out. I know we've just finalized a master plan that kind of goes from Mankato to, I want to say, Le Sueur. And I know we're working with Representative Lenteski and yourself as well, kind of going from Fort Snelling down through Le Sueur on the Minnesota River. I will work on that. If we need to change this language and expand it to include that, we'll work on an amendment for your committee. I think that's a great idea, and one that has just been overlooked since we've been focusing so narrowly just on this area of the river.
Okay. Representative Guineas.
It's the connectivity all down the river that is important. So somebody can actually go from St. Paul to Renville, Redwood, is the way this should be done. So if we could get that.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Meyer.
Members, I do agree with that, and we will work with you and other members of the committee to get some language to address that need at the next stop. So thank you for bringing that up. The revisor's instructions, Mr. Chairman, just deals with the designated to listed change, and then actually the repealers aren't outlined on this amendment, but let me, I believe if you have the bill in front of you, if you have the copy of the bill, the repealers are listed on the back. 84521 is these are all unsession repealers, basically suspensions of let's see here. 8901 deals with our Forest Road Coordination Committees. 103F121 and one subdivisions 3 or 4. Since these sections were written, federal law has been updated to require flood insurance is mandatory for federally backed loans. So we're looking to get rid of those two sections as well. And I believe 84.521, maybe council can help me out, deals with language that I think it might be LaCroix. Deals with another section we're repealing in the bill. I can take a look at that while you're answering questions and let you know what that one is.
Okay, I do know that Representative Green also had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just a simple one. On page 12.30, what's the difference between a public meeting and a public hearing?
Mr. Meyer.
The formalization of the hearing would be, some may require an ALJ to be present. We're just trying to simplify it, that we, the postings and things like that. We'll do a notification, a statewide press release, and notify it in the local newspapers that the public meeting is occurring. In our mind, it's just a terminology change.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One, under the civil penalties area of the bill, and this isn't real specific, but it's really just a question. For instance, at public landings, when people have not removed their drain plugs or drained their bilges and everything else, you have inspectors there at many landings, but they're not COs. Can they write those penalties, or do they have to call a CO?
Mr. Meyer?
Chairman, Representative Legal, they do not have any enforcement authority. They do need to contact our enforcement officers.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair. So how is that working out for you?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Legal, I could have Rodman Smith come down and answer that question. I can't. I would say it's working out relatively well, but you might want more information than that, so
that would be good.
I have a question while Rodman's coming down, Mr. Chairman. In any of the repealers, did you re-repeal the repeal of the repealer on the number of feet you can shoot a partridge from an ATV?
Mr. Meyer?
No, not thank yet, you. Mr. Chairman.
Representative McMurray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Rodman Smith, Assistant Director for DNR Enforcement. Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, just to be clear, when a inspector runs across a violation, they can call any peace officer. They normally do contact conservation officers. With the inspection authority, we do have a very good communication system. Our officers know when those people are out inspecting. So there have been some challenges, but it hasn't been anything overwhelming where we feel that those inspectors do need that authority to have that to be able to issue civil citations.
Thank you. That's good to hear. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one other question for Mr. Meyer. In this bill, the DNR is requiring a permit to remove dead logs, trees, and things from the waters. Could you expand on that? It seems a little erroneous if it's just part of a log or a tree. What is the intent of this?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ulam, could you direct me to that page number real quick?
16.
16, yeah.
16.1.8.
So currently in law, a public work permit is not required for those removal of those things. Rule already allows this. This language, it's duplicative language that we dealt with during the 2010 session, and we feel part of our unsession process is looking at removing duplicative language was to strike this language. You can already do this without a permit under rule. Just have to notify us, and we need to work with you. Part of the problem would be taking out habitat, things like that. If there's a deadhead that needs to be removed for safety reasons, of course we will support that. But we don't want people down there taking out all of the logs and things like that within a stream that could cause sedimentation, other sedimentation problems and things like that. We just want to work jointly with them on it.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Meyer, well, frequently lake homeowners and things like that have logs that wash up on the shore, or maybe one tree that falls down. Are they going to have to get a permit to take care of this?
Mr. Chairman, members, no. If there was a log sticking out of the water 100 feet off from your property, that's prohibited under different statutes, removal of sunken logs. So if something washes up on your property, you certainly don't need a permit to do that. But if it's submerged, buried in the lake bed because of stirring up the sediments and... We had a long debate many years ago about removal of sunken logs, and people wanted to remove these age-old sunken logs and slice them up for timberwood. There's concern from the DNR and the PCA about stirring up those sediments and mercury contamination and things like that have settled into those layers of the lake. So that's a completely different story. This what you're talking about, allowing the removal of
debris
would be certainly allowed. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, on page 4, there's something here about you billing different parts. I don't know if it's within DNR, tribal government, page 4, line 13. What actually is the department doing here, and what's the net effect? Are we talking about some money is going to change now than current process, or what are you actually doing?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, thank you for that question. The facilities management account is an internal account that we use to run our operational areas. And what we're trying to resolve here is in our regional offices, primarily some of our interdepartment offices that we have, like in Tower, where there's multiple divisions of the DNR, each division loads their yearly costs into an account. Right now, under current law, we have to unload that at the end of the fiscal year if there's any money remaining, then reload it back into the account again. This language will simply allow us to carry forward those funds from fiscal year to fiscal year for our operation, our facility operations.
Mr. McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And where does it apply? Is it when you're co-locating with the Department of DOT? And then what's the tribal government stuff?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, you'll see in other sections of this facility account, actually it's on lines 4.2, the Commissioner of Natural Resources may bill organizational units and other governmental units, including tribal units, for the cost of providing them with building and infrastructure facilities. If we were to rent out office space, we don't right now, but if we were to rent out office space to, say, a county, it goes the other way for us in several areas of the state where we're renting county space, but this language allows us to bill other governmental units, and we need to be specific to include tribal governments for the cost of them providing them for buildings and infrastructures. All this new language says is that money shall be credited to a special account in the state treasury and appropriated to the commissioner to pay the costs. What we're trying to resolve is this end of fiscal year reconciliation into the new fiscal year, that we don't have to send all those dollars back to the different accounts where they came from and then take them back the next day and put them back into the account again.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I just need to go back to the repealers 1 second. On the top of the repealers, 84.521, which actually we're repealing 84.43 to 84.52. This deals with language that was initially passed into law protecting the area over the BWCA from planes and radio communication and things like that. It's referred to this 1949 President Executive Order, actually President Truman Executive Order. Since the BWCA is now all under federal protection, this language is no longer necessary. We did check with the Friends of the Boundary Waters Canoeery, and they do support the removal of this language.
Okay, very good. Representative Wagenius.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking on page 12, and where you're talking about the public review of the master plan. And so you're going from a very formal hearing with an ALJ to a very informal meeting. So let me ask a couple questions about that. One, will there be a recording of the meeting?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that would be the intent.
I think we need to write the intent in if that is the case, because it doesn't say that. And secondly, it doesn't say that the meeting has to be before the approval. Because that language is being repealed and it's not quite replaced. So it seems to me that we have to rewrite that language to make sure that that meeting is at least after it's available to the public and before approval.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, we are changing the timing of the hearing or the meeting. I think, you know, 12.27 says when the master plan has been completed, the managing agency shall announce to the public in a manner reasonably designed to inform interests that the master plan is available for public review and hold at least one public meeting. The managing agency shall make the master plan available for review and comment by the public and all our state agencies for at least 30 days. I'm more than happy to sit down with anybody who has concerns about this process and work through the language we need to do between now and the next stop, so I will put that on our list to resolve.
Okay, very good. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I did catch some of your comments. I heard you talking about House File 1 and permitting and so forth. On page 3, you're changing from a semi-annual to an annual report. Can you give me some more information? I'm sorry I had to step out when you were going through that. I know it's redundant for you and the committee, but I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, thank you very much, and I apologize for not talking about this beforehand. I think it's been before you in another bill as well. What we're trying to do is streamline the reporting process on this, and you'll see on 3.8, it's the period of reporting is 150 days, so in the language that we passed required 2 6-month reports. So what we're asking to do is rather than go to a twice-a-year report, go to a once-a-year report that we think will be more inclusive and easier for a person to understand what our permitting goals have been for that year. We're meeting 98-99% of our permits that we're issuing are within that 90-day time or that 150-day time frame. There's another bill I believe Representative Portman is carrying that creates a Tier 2 for 90-day permits as well. So we're very cognizant of that. We just feel in order to streamline the reporting, it's easier to understand if we can do a yearly report that covers 365 days rather than 280-day reports, if that makes any sense at all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up. And to that point, I don't necessarily have, but did you involve stakeholders in this? There was obviously a lot of people that worked on getting the language to where it is today, and now you're proposing changing it. What's the input from, say, the chamber or the business community? Whatever.
Mr. Chairman, I have been in contact with the chamber. They have not expressed any concerns about removing that report, but we can address those concerns if there are any.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then on page 16, I'd like to follow up on Representative Uglum's questioning. We're talking about the removal of the debris. Section 103G deals with public waters. That's my interpretation anyway. What I'm concerned about is all of the headwaters of the Roseau River, the East and West Branch. I mean, everything from just a couple of miles north of Roseau all the way up into Beltrami, Hanson Creek. The World River, the East and West branches of that. The Rapid River all originate up in Beltrami. Lots of debris that comes down from various places. What I'm concerned about is there going to be any restriction on the local authorities to be able to remove debris from bridges, accumulations in certain places. I guess in the end I'm asking, is this what you referred to as an unsession change? In my interpretation of what unsession is supposed to be about is to streamline and make things easier. Is this going to make it easier for my LGUs to be able to do the ditch maintenance that needs to be done?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, this does not impact any ditch maintenance at all. This basically, we're removing duplicative or unnecessary language. This language does not add anything to current rule. So we just wanted to clarify that. So the net impact will be zero on what you're talking about.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just again, I would encourage you, I know that the drainage work group and others, the joint group that we have, Northern Land Use Board and so forth, has been involved in these things. Did you run this change by them? Is there anything that maybe they would have had as further suggestions to streamline things even more?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, I have not contacted any of those groups. I certainly can reach out to them and discuss that with them and take their input into consideration.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then my concern also becomes, you know, we're putting this into rulemaking, and it's easier for the agency to change rules and possibly tie the hands of LGUs in the future. Do I have your assurance that you're not going to do that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, we are not going to change the rules. The rules that cover this are already in place, so we're not looking for any new rules. We're just trying to clarify that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And finally, just a clarification on Representative Uglin was talking about logs and so forth in a lake up where Representative Dill and I live. We have a number of deadheads from time to time. Would this impact the removal of a deadhead?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, no, and actually I'm trying to pull up that rule right now. This language is already covered under Rule 6115.0200, Subdivision 4. So I can get you a copy of that and share that with you. If you just give me a second, I can find that language for you and cite it to you. So sub 4 says no permit is required for excavation if it is required following activities, and it covers to remove debris such as tree logs, stumps, trash, provided such removal does not alter the original alignment, slope, or cross-section of the waters, or for repair of a public drainage system lawfully established under Minnesota Statutes 103D and 103E and sponsored by drainage authority consistent with the definition of repair. So the situation you just talked about, drainage, that's already, there's no permit required, and it's covered under that rule as well. So I think we're safe.
I'm sure Commissioner Miller will be glad to hear that.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question was just answered.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions? We'll move on to amendments. Okay. First amendment is the A2 amendment. That's one that I'm offering. Members, the A2 amendment is an amendment that I've been meeting with a number of the different manufacturers and the DNR and ATVAM and a bunch of different groups that are looking at possibly changing some definitions and some things like that. We're working to maybe bring that next year. This is an ongoing process. We'll probably be meeting over the summer. We want to bring a good bill or at least a good amendment, something to make some changes. But this is something that we felt that we could get done now. I'm offering an amendment. This is something that I think everybody agreed to, at least with the folks that I was meeting with. So I offer the A2 amendment to make these minor changes to the ATV all-terrain vehicle, what do I want to call it, classifications, I guess. Any questions or comments? I would move the A2 amendment.
That could be.
Discussion. Seeing no discussion, I will. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wagenia.
When I look at the low pressure tires and then say non highway tires, I mean, a non highway tire could be a major tractor tire, right?
I'm sorry, Representative, a major what tire?
Tractor, or, you know, something that you wouldn't take out on the highway. So, non highway tire could be massively big, in contrast to a low-pressure tire that seems pretty not so big to me. So So am I getting that wrong?
Well, Representative Muguinas, what the issue here is, some of these, what they call a low-pressure tire, the pressures are going up on those tires, so they're not really complying with what we want with in relationship to a flotation tire or a low-pressure tire. They're still not high-pressure tires like a car tire, but the pressures are going up, and they don't really meet the classification of what I would call a low-pressure tire. So that's why we wanted to make the change. Yeah, Representative Guinness.
Okay, I get that. But to say non-highway tires is very, very inclusive of a whole bunch of other things, I think. So it just doesn't seem to be the right descriptor to me for what you just said.
Well, we've got someone that wants to explain that. Mr. Bowen, please state your name and who you're representing for the record.
Hello, Mr. Chair, committee. My name is Jonathan Bowen. I'm here representing Polaris Industries. Representative Wiginius, thank you for your question. The non-highway term comes from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. It is the term that they use in all of their federal guidelines. It's a term that's now being used around the country. On an ATV tire, or an off-highway tire, or a non-highway tire, it's actually stamped NHS, which is non-highway. So it gives enforcement and manufacturers guidelines, clear guidelines about what kind of tires they can use.
Representative Wiginius.
So is a definition of a non-highway tire in our statutes then?
Mr. Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, it is not. Like Representative Hackbarth had mentioned, we are working over the interim to redo the entire ATV definition to focus more on how trails are actually managed and different requirements that manufacturers are facing from the CPSC, as well as what the users are hoping to get out of the trail system. So we expect that to be part of the discussion. There is also one other piece to this as well. Polaris has designed a non-pneumatic tire, which is a no-pressure tire that is being sold on utility vehicles currently, utility ATVs. So there is also no definition of low pressure, which has been a problem, I think, for enforcement and for the industry to equip the vehicles correctly.
Representative Guinness.
Thank you. Well, it just seems to me it's a little premature, because if there's no definition of a non-highway tire, it could mean just about anything. So, and you might have something in your mind and you can envision what you think of a non-highway tire, but I may be thinking in my mind of something really different. And who's to know?
And just so members know, I think when this was put in statute, flotation tires and low-pressure tires took up some of the shock absorption from these all-terrain vehicles when they didn't have any suspension in it. Now these all-terrain vehicles have suspension, and the need for that flotation tire and that low-pressure tire really isn't there or needed that much anymore. And I think... if you look at statute around the country, most states use the term non-highway tire, not low pressure or flotation. Representative Urusel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if, as we just heard, there's a federal standard on that, why don't we just point to that as the definition of this term?
Yeah, as this bill moves forward, maybe we can come up with that and refer to that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bowen.
Thank you for that question. The CPSC uses just the term non-highway. There is no clear definition from them about exactly what that is. I can double check that, and as this bill moves to finance, if there is a clear definition, we'd be happy to work with Representative Dill on making that change.
Representative Urusel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It kind of sounds to me like what that's really about is that it's just a tire that's not certified for highway use, because they have standards for that. Mm-hmm. So I think, as Representative Wiginius is pointing out, I think it, you know, that doesn't really reassure me that we have any kind of definition of that. And so to use it as part of the definition of the all-terrain vehicle when we don't have a definition of that part doesn't really... doesn't really serve the purpose here, I think. So something different has to be done.
Well, like I said, most states, this is the term that they use for tires for ATV. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
I assume since there are no questions on the weight in the rest of the amendment, I haven't heard any at least, that we could eliminate the change on 1.6 and 1.7 until such time that we can come up with a better definition and then adopt the rest of the amendment at the next committee stop or at some point when we can't get the right description. I'm not saying this is the wrong description, but I frankly support the amendment. But I can sense the discussion here makes some uncomfortable in adopting the language on line 1.16 and 7 at this very moment.
Okay, so, Representative Dill, I'll include that. I'll include that in my amendment.
So you're saying that the underlined language on the stricken language on 1.6 and the underlined language on 1.7 will be eliminated. We'll just eliminate the entire substance of that part from 1.14 to 1.18 as far as changes, and then adopt the rest of the amendment.
Right, Representative Dill. I'll just take out what is listed as Section 7 of the amendment.
And, Mr. Chairman, and as author of the bill, when this is amended, I do intend to find a description that meets some of the requirements that I was thinking about a tractor on my farm and the tire. Now, that's a relatively high-pressure tire, but as I think about it, I'm not certain that that's I don't believe that it's a on-road tire. I don't think it has any definition other than a tractor tire. I call up the John Deere dealer and say, I need my tractor tire fixed. So that's the reason I brought forward the amendment to the amendment.
I'll Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is going to make a difference, but I think if you look at your tractor tire, they are classified, and they're classified either for farm use. So I think it's farm use only or implement tire. Because I've seen a lot of them, and so if it helps, there might be if there is a definition of a farm tire as an implement tire, maybe that would help this somehow. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we'd be best if we didn't do that first part as you and I have just discussed and adopt the rest of it.
Okay, to the A2 amendment with the changes of taking out what is listed as Section 7. I'm sorry. Yep, Section 7. And council has understands the change. Okay, all in favor of the A2 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. To the A3 amendment, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And A3 amendment is the bill we heard yesterday for soil and water supervisors elected by district. I would move the A3 amendment.
Questions?
Author supports the amendment.
Seeing no questions, all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The A5 amendment is Representative Dills.
Thank you. Mr. Larson, come forward. See here.
Mr. Larson, please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Dan Larson, today representing the Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association. Here to support the A5 amendment. We found that the language in the bill was drafted a little too broadly for what the concern was. The Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association is currently involved with the Department of Natural Resources in a Phase 2 state forest designation process, and we found the first county that we went to to designate trails as Pine County, and one of the concerns that came up was from a hunter who said, well, if you designate a trail for an off-road vehicle, I won't be able to use my highway license vehicle to get to my deer hunting stand, and this is an attempt to address that concern. It's written a little too broadly, and the amendment is drafted to address that concern, to again allow highway licensed vehicles to traverse forest trails designated for off-road vehicle use.
Any questions on the amendment?
During hunting season, I should say, for hunting purposes.
All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
Thank you.
Okay, the next amendment is the 8 amendment. That's one of my amendments. This is some language that passed in the bill. It's language, actually, that I carried last year, and I think the DNR had some problems with the language, and we didn't change everything that needed to be changed, so we're going to change it back to the way it was. So I think everybody's on the same page with this. Questions to the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The 8-8 amendment is adopted. Representative Deal, two-year bill.
No other things that I have for the bill as amended. And if there are no questions, I would like to renew my motion to move it to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division. Representative Union.
First, we'll ask if anyone in the audience has any comments, would like to testify for or against the bill. Seeing no one coming forward, Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 2733 be re-referred as amended to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, and Agricultural Finance. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment, or the bill as amended is being moved to Representative Wagenius' committee. Okay, Representative Dill moves the House File 2852 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. To the Game and Fish Bill, Representative Dill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. As we said, this is the Game and Fish Bill. We have a DE1 amendment, so I'd like to amend that to get it initially in the shape that we need to get it into. If I move the amendment to 2852 DE1.
Well, Representative Dill will adopt the DE1 amendment first.
Yep.
All in favor of the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The DE1 amendment is adopted.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And got Mr. Meyer is seated at the desk, and I also think that Mr. Carlos likely will come up and we'll talk about the bill as amended with the DE1. And if they could give a brief presentation, possibly more brief than the first presentation, but so that everyone is fully informed.
I don't like that one.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think I'll have Mr. Meyer. Carlos just run through the bill very quickly.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you. My name is Kathy Don Carlos. I'm Deputy Director for DNR Division of Fish and Wildlife. I apologize in advance. We received a copy of the DE1 amendment shortly before noon today, and so we've made some changes to our fact sheet. So as I walk through this with you, I apologize for any mistakes ahead of time, but I think between the three of us, we should be able to figure out what's up. I just want to start out by saying that, as with most game and fish bills, there will be sections that have to do with policy changes, sections that have to do with technical changes, and then a third component this year, as you've heard for previous bills, there'll be sections that have to do with deleting obsolete duplicative language. This bill, just to give you a highlight ahead of time, is mainly a large component of this has to do with cleaning up statutes and removing that antiquated, obsolete, and duplicative language. There are a few policy changes, and there are a number of technical changes. So I'm going to go through this bill by topic rather than by number, as Mr. Meyer did with the previous bill. So starting out with sections 1, 2, 3, And then going to the Section 55 for obsolete language. Basically, these are statutes that have to do with the establishment of L'Aquaparo Lake water control. These provisions were done in the 1930s with an agreement with the federal government. And so without jeopardizing or affecting that system, we're just removing obsolete language. As you can see, it refers to federal flood control acts from 1938, laws of 1943. So we're really just cleaning up the language around L'Aquaparo water control. Sections 4 to 5, 53 and 56 have to do with making more similar the use of OHVs and snowmobiles for deer hunting. There were inconsistencies in statute and rule for use of ATVs and snowmobiles and specific hours. We were ready to introduce this last year, and we took additional time to review that and get more input. That's really a slight policy change with those provisions. Section 6 and 56 again have to do with repealing obsolete language on Muskellunge Lake designations. Currently we're using statutes 97C.001 and 97C.005 to designate these waters. Using those two statutes renders 97C.011 obsolete. Moving on to Section 7 and 8, along with 56, these provisions again repeal obsolete language having to do with Red Lake WMA. This was a preserve originally created in 1929. All this is doing is removing language that no longer is pertinent. Moving on to Section 9, there was a technical, this is a technical change. This section, which has to do with ownership of wild animals, actually incorrectly refers to, in the reference 84A, refers to wild rice statutes. So we're not sure how that happened, but that's a technical correction. Section 10 has to do with the Game and Fish Fund Oversight Committee. With the recent interest in advisory committees created under Chapter 15, this section really just clarifies that we're not, that this oversight committee is not operating under Chapter 15. This is a committee that whose members are reimbursed for mileage, and they're given a box lunch when they meet on a monthly basis for about 5 months during the winter months. And that's their compensation. Section 11 removes a reference to state-owned game farms. The state closed its last game farm in the 1970s, and we don't foresee a need for reinstituting game farms. So that language is that this is a technical correction. Section 12 has to do with use of motorized vehicles by disabled hunters. This clarifies the authority that the agency has, that the commissioner has, to permit use of motor vehicles by disabled hunters, to also include boats and highway licensed vehicles. We didn't have this permit authority before, obviously. Section 13 clarifies our authority to issue permits to cross WMAs. This is typically done for private landowners and other government agencies that have land that's landlocked that they can't get to without getting authorization to cross state lands, state wildlife management areas. So we're seeking authority to issue those permits when there's no other option. Sections 14 and 15 have to do with providing the commissioner authority to issue license refunds when a mistake has been made by an ELS agent. Technically, that's not possible now. It's not a good business practice, and it doesn't result in happy customers. So this is giving us the authority to issue license refunds. There's beginning with Section 16, 16, 33, 34, 39, 44, 52, and 56, along with some obsolete language, has to do with simplifying the small game season statutes. Currently, it's the language is inconsistent, and this is simplifying the language and bringing it all together under small game season management rather than each species individually. It's also much of the what we need is already in rule. We do not have the rule language necessary for gray partridge bag limits, and so this also includes rulemaking authority to establish those bag limits. Moving on, I want to turn to the author. The sections beginning with section 17 to 20 have to do with licenses for residents with disabilities, and this, I believe, Representative Dill, is your additions with this delete all.
Representative Dill.
Thank you very much. This would allow for a person with a 100% disability to have it put on the back of the driver's license. And then they would not have to take their papers to their papers from their doctor. They'd have to prove it once. And then if the law states that it has to be proved again, they wouldn't have to do it again until the law said that it had to be. What happened is, in practicality, is here you have a license agent. Let's just pick on a young person. They walk in there. Somebody walks in with a handful of papers and say, I want a license. I want it for free. This is my information. I'm 100% disabled. And so they give them the license. But from this point forward, and not that anyone would do that, mind you, but from this point forward, the disabled veteran that's 100% disabled during the period of time that is the case, they would have it on the back of their license. There's a couple of problems in the way the bill was drafted. It has to do with the effective date and how the different, maybe Ms. Taylor, can you quickly explain that? It's a bit complicated, but we do have concurrence on this language with the DOT. Or with public safety, I'm sorry.
Ms. Taylor, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, members, there is an amendment in your packet to fix the effective date issue, and I believe there's some other additional changes that will be coming forward with the designations.
And that would be the A6, I believe.
Correct.
Okay. Dr. Carlos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moving on, I'll try to move this more quickly. Sections 21 to 24 and 51 have to do with lifetime licenses. 2 years ago, during the 2012 session, angling and hunting licenses were increased. During conference committee, there was an oversight in that the lifetime licenses were adjusted downward for some spearing license adjustments that were made at that time. This is a correction for that. We're also seeking authority to issue refunds for those people that were issued the higher lifetime licenses incorrectly. Most of these licenses include a spearing feature, a spearing license with it. So this is a technical correction. Sections 25 to 26 is also a technical correction. As you may recall, during the last session, we proposed in the Game and Fish Bill, and those provisions were passed to standardize and lower the costs for resident and non-resident youth hunting fees. By oversight, we did not adjust the bear license, and so this is a technical provision bringing those youth bear licenses down to be consistent with the other license changes we made last year. Section 27 removes the issuing fee for free licenses that involve those with disabilities. Again, this is kind of a follow-up from last year. By oversight, we did not realize that those issuing fees were lifted, needed to be lifted. Moving on, Section 28 is a removal of obsolete language. In the past, DNR issued a form to road authorities, to county road authorities, for tracking road kills. That hasn't been done for several decades. Deer are still being tracked as well as possible, but this form is not being used. Sections 29 and 31, there is a slight modification from what the
DNR proposed, but this has to do with the use of electric range finders for hunting, and it clarifies that handheld electric range finders are allowed for archery and firearms hunting, and this language is acceptable for us. I'm sorry to do that on the run like that. Section 32 has to do with thermal imaging equipment, and it restricts the use of thermal imaging equipment, including scopes and other vision devices, in the same manner that we restrict night vision equipment. This equipment is generally used for the same purpose of locating and taking wild animals in cover of night or hiding, but it's using a similar but differing technology. Sections 35 and 37 are new from the authors, so I'd like to turn it back over to you, Representative Dell.
Representative Dell.
Okay, on Section 37, that is the Moline bill that allows for a contest, a deer hunting contest essentially, to be sanctioned and under Minnesota Gambling Control Board regulations, so that someone could buy a chance and they go out and hunt, and if they get the biggest deer, they win the raffle. It could be conducted by both licensed and exempt organizations. So licensed organizations would be someone who did one of the five types of licensed gambling, such as pull tabs or bingo or things like that, that they do it continuously. Or an exempt organization is someone like a small a Legion club might write in, and you get an exemption. You can have so many dollars in total prizes in any given year, and unlimited numbers of raffles and things of that nature. So that passed without any really basically any discussion in the other in the whatever committee we had. And this is too compressed. Go ahead. I lost where it was after that.
Mr. Chair, I made a mistake. Section 35 has to do with.
Excuse me one moment, Mr. Darkwell. Representative Cornish, think you had
it? Oh, I think she was just about to do it. Section 35. I just wondered what. I understood that when we're going through it, but it says 17107 subdivision 17, and I don't find any in the statute book. I wonder what that is on line 18.2.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, that 171.07 subdivision 17 is a new provision that's being added, having to do with the anglers and hunters with disability and free licenses, and that section is that's in, you can find that in section 48.
So
page 22.
Mr. Chair, well, I was wondering, does it change the requirements as far as the disability? Section 48, you said? Subdivision.
Page 22.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is Meyer. Representative Dill's bill that actually is trying to simplify the issuance of these free licenses for disabled people. You can see here it creates on page 22.21 to 22.31, it creates a type 1 through type 5 level of disability. So we go through in the bill and we're classifying each one of these different licenses as a certain type, and then the person would have that issuance on the back of their card, their driver's license, as Representative Dill described, and go to the ELS agent. That agent would be able simply to say, okay, this person is eligible for a type 1, a type 3, and a type 5 license. We will need to reprogram the ELS system so that agent can then just pull up on the screen, go under disabled license, click type 1, type 3, type 5, and it'll all work seamlessly. The effective date on this will be once the DPS, right, the driver's license new system is up, or 2016, whichever is later, and I believe it will be the latter rather than the former. So our fiscal note will reflect the fact that programming will be needed for the ELS system, but not until such a date that DPS system is getting close to completion.
And Mr. Chairman, that was our agreement with public safety, is that we wouldn't have this come in effect until they had their program up and running and ready for it. In other words, they didn't want to program it now and then have changes and have to reprogram it, you know, by 2016. So that was something as well. We originally didn't have the bill that way, but they came in and asked, and we said, yes, that was a good idea.
Well, Mr.
Representative
Cornish, what I was getting at, I guess, is this going to make it easier to get the crossbow permit with the numbers 1 through 5 disabilities? I mean, you're not going to say, I've got diabetes, I need a crossbow permit, or, I mean, does it change any requirements, or you still have to initially go into a doctor to get that put on your driver's license? And
Representative
Dill. You'd have a document from the doctor that said you qualified for that, that you had that disability, and that therefore matched up with the statute. You would be able to then, they would program their machine, you would show your papers at the driver's license facility, and they would hit, if that's number three, and it would print out.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Ms. Taylor, did you have any further clarification on that?
Mr. Chair, no, I think Mr. Meyer.
Okay. Very good. Ms. Doncarlo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 28, then, continuing, elk management plan. This provision removes a reference that restricts elk to non-agricultural land. That's simply not achievable given the current elk range. So this is a technical correction. Moving on, sections 40 to 42 are technical changes. It's referring to an old division name, so it's just correcting that from Wildlife Division to Division of Fish and Wildlife Division. Section 43 is a provision that has to do with allowing non-lethal hazing of Canada geese. This was a provision that was prepared during last year's session, but was not prepared in time to be included in the Game and Fish Bill. And this just allows landowners that are experiencing property damage, including primarily agricultural damage, to non-lethally haze, scare, chase, or harass Canada geese during a certain period of time. This is already allowed under federal law. Moving on to sections 45 and 46, these are some policy changes having to do with requiring minnow dealers and those taking leeches and commercial fishing license holders to take invasive species training. This was part of our legislative report last year, and stakeholders involved with preparing that report, including minnow dealers, those taking leeches, and those having commercial fishing licenses, did support this, and thus it was recommended in the report. This just makes that happen. For your information, the training is already online, some of these license holders have already taken that training. There's also a provision that requires.
Excuse me one moment. Representative Wagenius, you had a question?
I do. I'm just trying to understand the subdivision 3. You talk about residents under age 18. What about residents over age 18?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, residents over age 18 need a license, and they would also be required. They're already required to have that training, so it's capturing those under 18 that don't need a license.
Okay, please continue.
Section 15, thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 15 is an update of an appropriation that was made under the laws of 2008. This was actually the author's bill. We're requesting an expansion of the language to allow us to use these funds. We finished the design work that was required in the original appropriation language, and we're requesting the ability to use these remaining funds to establish low-impact hunter education, firearm safety ranges, and archery ranges on public properties. Section 54 is a new section from the author.
Mr. Chairman, can I just go back to that section really quick?
Mr. Meyer.
Section 50, we have been working with an amendment that we'll have in front of the Environment Finance Committee that does appropriate some of these funds to a dislocated range up in Itasca County. We've been working with the author on that issue. I think Representative Anzels has a bill, so we will be putting that amendment on it in the Environment Finance Committee.
Okay. Mr. Representative Dill.
Representative McNamara, too. That's the question that you asked me at lunchtime. The language we'll be proposing it in Representative Wagenius's committee. Okay.
Mr. Meyer, where was this money spent? I guess that's my question. What was the original intent of this money?
Mr. Chairman, members, the language actually came from Representative Dill back in 2009. And this was, and it still is, something that we're working on jointly. I believe there's a bill being carried by the Minnesota Conservation Federation that has $2 million of game and fish funds for grants to local sporting clubs. And we're interested in trying to figure that out, probably in the next biennial budget, not this year, just because of the time frames we're working under. But the original appropriation was for kind of pre-design and design of a metro area shooting facility, and Representative Dill can talk about his vision. We did do a pre-design and issued a request for interest, I think it was an RFI, from people to look at a metro kind of shooting facility. The explosion of the high school trap league just statewide is phenomenal, and it's something we're very interested in trying to help. And we also have a lot of federal dollars that are coming in due to the sale of guns and ammunition, the Pittman Robertson dollars that are out there that we're hopeful to come together next year with some kind of biennial budget proposal that will help meet those needs out there. This is just the beginning of that, and we're trying to allocate some of these dollars, and kind of what we've agreed to is that we would be able to keep some of the funding for the ranges on public properties, and we would use some to do a grant up in northern Minnesota for a displaced shooting range up there.
Representative Dill.
Thank you. There will be an oral amendment to this section that Ms. Taylor has that we'll adopt here. I'll just ask to adopt as we're going through amendments that will straighten out the language before we get it to Representative Wagenius's committee.
Okay, very good. Dr. Carlos, please continue.
Mr. Chair, I think we left off at section 54, which is the author's amendment. Mm-hmm.
54.
Which is the author's proposal.
Representative Dill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 54 has to do with the training of rabbits, using dogs to chase wild rabbits for training purposes. As an example, you would be using them, dogs, a pointer setter, Labradors, to train on pheasants or partridge or something like that. This would allow for rabbits to also be used in the same way, except for a specific period that presently, as it's in the bill, mimics the exceptions for, I believe it's fox, that takes into consideration ground nesting birds and things of that nature. And I asked the DNR to come up with the language on that, and they have come forward with it, consistent with fox. Representative Hackbarth has an amendment that makes it just a date change amendment that makes it consistent with the other game animals rather than fox, and that will be coming forward in a bit. And this has come from about 2 years of folks asking for this ability, and I've just been talking to different people about it until finally it's come forward in a bill, and we do have one individual here that could testify on it at the appropriate time.
Very good. Any further comments from the DNR on summary of the bill? Are we close to...
Mr. Chairman, just the repealers deal with, I think they're listed on that fact sheet as well that we handed out. You can see the repealers. I did hand it. The repealers are listed on the handout that the amended fact sheet as per the DE1 that we did this afternoon. So it might not be perfect, but at least gets you in the ballpark. So
Ms. Chair,
Representative.
I again ask Mr. Meyer. I'm looking at quickly looking at these repealers, and I haven't had time to go through them. Are you repealing the repeal of the partridge distance again? You've tried it before, and I've caught it. I'm just asking you simply the question.
No, I'm not. If you keep saying that, I might think of a way to do it.
Thank you.
Okay, are we ready for questions? Representative McNamara.
I just want to know if they're repealing three pheasants on December.
That I can tell you I've read, and they're not.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Representative Urso.
Since I'm ignorant of the details of the statute, and I may have just found my answer, but on the leeches section, the original statute language is permissive, allowing...
Where are we at exactly?
Oh, I'm sorry. 21.1 through 21.5. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The original statute language... allows people under 18 to catch and sell leeches. So I'm just wanting to make sure that this doesn't inadvertently require kids that are using leeches for bait to have a species, invasive species training certificate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Houston, no, it doesn't, but it would require a person who's trapping minnows to take the training. The training is online. It's pretty simple. Actually, it's kind of like if you can teach them at that young of an age, they'll be embedded in their memory forever, right? So the more invasive species training we can get into young kids, the better off we are. And we're trying to make sure that it's done in a way that it's fairly easy for them to do and complete. So it's only if they're trapping minnows for sale, selling, transporting leeches within the state.
Okay. Any other questions on the bill before we move to amendments?
Mr. Chairman,
ready for amendment.
Could we do the oral amendment first to the section regarding the
Representative Dill, oral amendment.
Ms. Taylor will explain the amendment.
Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the amendment he's referring to would start on page 22 regarding section 48. On line 22.16, delete designations and insert designation. And then on line 22.19, delete everything after designation and insert based on the following medical conditions. And then on line 22.20, delete everything before the colon. And then on page 23, you would delete section 49.
Questions to the oral amendment? All understood. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. That oral amendment is adopted. Okay. Representative Hansen, the A1 amendment.
I would move the A1 amendment. It's the quail recovery plan we just heard earlier this meeting.
Any questions to the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. A1 amendment is adopted. The A4 amendment, Representative Dill.
Thank you very much. When the DNR came and proposed the portion in the bill, and we discovered a small problem with the overlap of using a snowmobile on a trail during the tail end of deer season. The snowmobile trails officially open on the 1st of December and close on April 1st. But the way the bill was drafted, including in the delete all amendment, was that it made it so that you could not take a snowmobile on a snowmobile trail during the last 14 days, the distance between the time between December 1st and December 14th on a trail. And so that fixes this. It's technical. It didn't change the intent of what we were trying to accomplish, but it just doesn't cause a problem. So the conservation officers out there and stop someone, they talk about it, and the law says December 1, but yet the muzzleloader season is continuing.
Questions to the amendment, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for Mr. Meyer, I think this year the second season in the Zone 300 ended on December 1st. So there was an overlap on a December 1st for the non-muzzleloader season. So I'm just wondering if we're inadvertently catching somebody there the calendar may lay uniquely there every couple of
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, Meyer. And we'll look into that. The intention of the language in the bill was right now a person could use a snowmobile during the firearm season throughout the whole day if you had a driver's license, if you had a firearms license. I mean, if you're a deer hunter and use a ATV at all to get to your stand or to recover game, you can only operate it in the morning till a half hour before sunrise, and then between 11 and 2 and at night a half hour after sunset. But you could use your snowmobile all day long. So unfortunately, with this winter we've had, we're thinking we might be needing more snowmobiles. So we're trying to fix that loophole. So we will need to make sure that we can take that into consideration as well. I mean, the intent is to allow a person who has a firearms license to go snowmobiling riding on these trails once they're open. It's not to allow people to be hunting on these trails, but fix that loophole. So we'll look at the language and try to fix that.
Representative Dill.
And I agree with that. I on my way down here, I questioned when it says a licensed muzzleloader, because if the firearm season overlapped, that's not a muzzleloader. And so I questioned that. And so I'd like to adopt that this language, and we'll investigate if there's the potential for those overlap, or maybe we just take out the muzzleloader part so that it applies to either or.
Any further discussion on the A4 amendment? Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move to modify the A4 and delete the word muzzleloader on line 1.16 and 1.17, just in case someday, believe it or not, we may have more deer and the regular firearm license could run the first few days of December. I'm just wondering if it wouldn't make sense to remove that. I think it seems to be, makes it clearer to start, and if we change it back, we could. So I don't know, who moved the A4? Was it?
Representative Dill.
Well, I'm just wondering if you'd take that as a friendly amendment.
Yes, I would, but we will still look into this whole thing, just make sure we don't have a technical problem. I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Representative Dill includes that, what is the word I'm looking for, includes that in his amendment. Any further discussion to the amendment as modified? All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted as modified. Representative Dill, the A6 amendment.
Okay, this had to do with the date of the enactment on the driver's license designation, making it applies to applications submitted on or after January 2016, or the date of the new driver and vehicle services informational technology is implemented, which either comes first. So this just gets to the problem that we talked about earlier.
Any further discussion? Representative Dill moves the A6 amendment. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. A6 amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, the A8 amendment.
I would move the A8 amendment that was heard by Representative Hornstein earlier this meeting.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. Okay, I get the hybrid. Is the narrow leaf cattail a native or non-native?
Representative Hansen?
Mr. Meyer.
Yes. Dr. Carlos, you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius. Narrow leaf cattail is believed to have spread from the eastern coastal states to the Midwest over the last 80 to 100 years.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay. But we do have a native cattail, right?
Right. Mr. Carlos?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so if these two are non-native, it would be helpful, I think, if we, instead of said narrow leaf, as we go along to say non-native narrow leafed, so that it's crystal clear that we are trying to preserve our natives.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, Representative Wagenius, I think that makes sense.
Representative Wagenius?
Could I make that as, would that be acceptable to the author and the author?
Well, I have a question.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chairman. So is it in at the Loring Lake, Loring Park Lake, are there, is it intermingled native and non-native together, and during the removal under the general permit, are you going to be allowed to remove the native cattails under this provision?
Representative Guinea.
As written.
Don't ask me. It's not my bill. And nobody's ever asked me about it. That's why I'm bringing it up and asking the question.
Well, I, Mr. Chairman, I do not know the answer to that question, so I refer to Representative Hansen. I think that the bill as written requires that if we accept your amendment to just remove the narrow leaf non-native cattails. But now my concern is, and usually I don't worry about this thing because I don't think cattails are that big of a deal myself for where I live, but they're more of a problem for ducks. But we might be getting ourselves into the deep end of the Loring Park Lake here.
Representative Wagenius.
I think that our own cattails, the nine hybrid dyes, and the, if this is the narrow leaf, are actually in jeopardy because these two are crowding them out. So we don't want to put our natives in jeopardy. I believe that's the situation.
Mr. Chair and the author and the Representative Guineas.
Representative Hansen.
Ms. Taylor, do we have a definition of invasive cattails, or do we have a definition of non-native cattails anywhere in statute or session law?
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not aware of one, no.
Oh. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so even if we put non-native or invasive in, it doesn't clarify the issue. And similar to what had happened with the, and I thought maybe we had done this when Representative Benson had the bill. I think it's always good to get definitions in. What I would suggest is I would still like to move the amendment for Representative Hornstein to get this going. It goes to government operations next, where I think that would be appropriate because it's the park board on what the definition could be, unless somebody else has something clarifying here.
I think somebody does.
Representative Benson, have a comment?
No, Ward.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ward.
Oh, he's here. He had to leave, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just looked up University of Minnesota. Invasive cattails may be the latest Minnesota wetland problem. There are invasive species, and they are hybridizing with the native ones, and they are threatening our native cattails. There are fewer and fewer of them. So it would be good, I think, to have that definition clarified and do what work we can to preserve the natives.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, when this bill was being heard earlier today, I mentioned the need for our desire to work with the Park Board to create a lake vegetation management plan. That plan would outline the protection of the natives and the removal of the invasives or the non-natives. So those are all issues that would be dealt with under a lake vegetation management plan, and that plan would also allow us the authority to issue variances to remove greater than the amounts that are in statute and rules. So it is something we need to continue to address, the development of that plan.
Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, how come that we passed the law last year and we haven't got anything done this year? And we're now back at it again, as Representative Benson said before he left.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, and members, we did issue a general permit for the Shavers Lake group. I believe we did a lake vegetation management plan with them as well. Part of their concern was that they wanted to eradicate the entire lake at one time of removal of all of the cattails. I think we're trying to accommodate that to a certain degree, but removing all of the vegetation around a lake without putting in shoreline erosion blankets, creating some kind of buffers, allowing some kind of other vegetation to take place, may create a condition that we may be coming back for clean water money to restore a lake because of that. But because of the plants are there uptaking the phosphorus and the nutrients in the lake, if we remove all of the plants and there's nothing there to take up those nutrients, we're concerned about that problem. That's why we want to work with Shavers Lake with Loring Lake to see what we could do to meet their needs, but also learn from them, since these are small-scale projects, to help us deal with projects in the future. But just completely cutting down all the cattails on the whole lake and then trying to replant the lake in 1 year may or may not be the right thing to do.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the department kind of told me about some of the problems. This is problematic. We should not be doing this. This is wrong. We should not be telling them they have to do it. You got all kinds of erosion potential. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move an oral amendment to change the shall in line 1.6 to may.
Well, and the we're shall already on an amendment.
Haven't we moved the amendment?
Representative Wagenius, I believe, moved an amendment.
I'd be surprised.
Oh, I thought you were amending his amendment.
Oh, thank you.
That's where we're at, Mr. Your amendment to his amendment.
Yes, and it would be to say invasive, narrow leaf, or hybrid and invasive, and I was asking the author if that would be okay.
So
I think that's where we were.
So we can't take your amendment to the amendment to the amendment. So, Representative Wagenius, I would like to suggest this is a sticky situation. And I know that Representative Hansen is just carrying the water for Representative Hornstein. This bill is going to come to your committee. If you could withdraw your amendment, we could move on and maybe address it in your committee. I think that would be a good idea.
Representative Hackforth, I'd be glad to do that. But if we could ask the commissioner's office to have come with us something that talks about having a management plan and distinguishes between invasives and non-invasives. Does that seem suitable to this committee?
It seems fair to me, if that's okay with the author of the bill, Representative Dill, and we can work on this before it gets to your committee and come up with some kind of an agreement on what can be done here. Does that take care of your issue too, Representative McNamara?
I think my ammunition is better in the other committee. I'll withdraw my oral amendment and wait for Representative Wagenius' committee.
So, Representative Hansen renews his motion that the A8 amendment be adopted, and we'll work on it as the bill is progressing. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay, we're on an oral amendment for me. I'm going to be offering on page 25, line 5, to the use of rabbits and hares to train dogs. Line 5, I'm going to change March 14th to April 16th. This brings it more in line with training other dogs, other bird dogs, etc., trying to make it easy for everybody to understand rather than having many different dates for training dogs. It just makes it simpler. The only other date that has March 14th has something to do with training dogs with fox or something. So I think this makes it better. We do have a gentleman in the audience that brought this language to Representative Dill, and he didn't bring the language, but brought the concern, and the DNR put some language together for us. So I would like to change March 14th to April 16th to make it more consistent within the rules. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked the department to give me language that was consistent with the fox, not having read the actual pamphlet that the DNR sends out that says April. So they did exactly what I asked them to do, not realizing that as another place I could find the other date that talks about bird dogs. Now, maybe the DNR has something to say about this, but that is the genesis of this amendment in changing it to April.
Discussion. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, it seems like this would be a pro bunny amendment here for the little baby ones around Easter time. Kind of a pro bunny amendment.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, we do have concerns with that date. We can sit down and talk about where our recommendations were and why they were on March at that point in time, but our staff and professionals do think there will be impacts at the nesting season at that April 16th date, but we're willing to discuss that and talk about it.
I'm anti-bunny, too.
Mr. Meyer, how many people in the state of Minnesota do this sort of thing?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not sure at this point in time.
Very minimal. Very minimal. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to go ahead and amend the bill as you do, and then we can come back again and talk about it because it has several stops on its way to the floor, including Representative Wagenius's. Because when a beagle is running in the open field in an area where, let's say, there are pheasants that habitate, the the pheasants are going to be disrupted. Rabbits will be disrupted from their place of where they may be. And so I just don't see the purpose in limiting March 13th unless there's some biological reason. I asked for the language to be mimicked like the fox because that's what I read. So I'd like to have it, members of the committee, I'd like to have it that as well, and then we can go back and negotiate. It'll be kind of like passing a bill on eradicating cattails but not ever eradicating them.
Any further discussion? All in favor of my oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay, anyone else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill?
Chairman, I'd like to move the bill as amended to go to government operations.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative McNamara.
I got a couple different questions. Sorry, am I ready?
Nope, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 16, line 24, I think the electronic range finder are inconsistent with current deer hunting times. I'm thinking on line 24 it should be sunrise until a half hour after sunset instead of sunset. I'm wondering if the if the chair would accept that as a oral amendment or the author of the bill, Representative Dill. I see DNR nodding their head. Yes, I'd like to move in front of, after the word until and before sunset, 1.5 hour after.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I first need to withdraw my amendment to move it to government operations so that we can accept Representative Hackbar's amendment.
McNamara,
I'm sorry. Yeah, your amendment. Representative McNamara's amendment. So I do withdraw that and we'll accept the McNamara amendment.
Okay. State your exact oral amendment again, Representative McNamara, and we'll vote on it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry for
page 16,
delaying
line
this.
24.
Right. What I'm wondering is if, because it's sunset is normal for, it would be sunset for turkeys, but it would be a half hour after for deer. Is Colonel Rodman okay if it says a half hour after sunset?
He's shaking his head in the affirmative.
Okay. That would be my oral amendment. After the word until, on line 16.24, insert one half hour after. So it would read sunrise until 1.5 hour after sunset, which is current law in deer hunting, Mr. Chair.
Everyone understand the amendment? All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion prevails. That amendment's adopted. Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, on section 40, page 19, there's reference to, I missed it. I'm on the wrong spot.
Yeah.
I was going to the one where there's talking about the small game, and it references wolf. But wolf, I believe, under current statute, is a big game now. Is that not true? Okay. That question is wrong. And then I had one more question, Mr. Chair. Does anybody else got any questions? I got to find my other one.
I think we're going to vote on the bill, Representative McNamara, until you interrupted.
I was trying to, Mr. Chair, both
you make a good amendment, though.
And the testifier go really fast, and I appreciate that. I like that, and it couldn't have been very important. If it was, I'll bring it up in Representative Lugenius's committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any further discussion? Again, anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill?
Okay. I'll renew my vote.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 2852, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion prevails. The bill is moving on to Government Operations. We're going to move the minutes. Representative McNamara, have you had a chance to check the minutes?
I did, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the minutes.
Representative McNamara moves the minutes from... What day was this? March 11th. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed. Minutes are adopted. Members, committee is adjourned.